Hi there. Hello. Welcome back to the show. Can you believe it? We got a full episode today. Did you ever think that you'd see one of these again? I'm excited. This is a good episode. I just wanted to stay up at the front here really quickly. That I'm still in the process of recording episodes through Zoom conversations and over the phone, and I'm still figuring out what the best way to record that audio is and make sure that we're getting everything really clear. And this is another one of those conversations. It works best when the person on the other end has their own microphone to record into, obviously, but not everyone has that, of course. So we're just making do with what we've got. It's just like having a conversation with someone on the phone in real life. Sometimes the audio dips down a little bit and you miss a word or two, but you catch like 98% of it. And that's kind of the case here today. And I just wanted to say that up front. I'm doing my best to get you 100% of the words. And I try to have the guests repeat things that maybe dip down so that we're getting all of the story. But it's there. And you're familiar with how this sounds. It's like people calling into a radio show and talking over the phone or, you know, you know what's up. I'm just saying it at the top that I'm still working out the bugs of how to best get these phone conversations to you. Anyway, I'm excited about this episode. Good guest, good topic. Okay, here we go. Dating back to our earliest ancestors, the communities who won out in the ongoing competition of natural selection were the ones who mastered the ability to adapt. Say the area you've settled in has more brutal and unforgiving winters than you were expecting. You'll most likely have to adapt to finding shelter that can keep you and yours safe, clothing that can better insulate you, or simply relocating to a new area where the winters are maybe more mild. Now, perhaps there are predators near your village that your hunters and warriors are having difficulty contending with. This scenario might call for a new innovation in weaponry or battle strategy. Perhaps a neighboring community isn't playing nice or is bringing previously unknown bacterial plagues and pestilence. Whatever the threatening circumstance may be, the theme is the same. Over and over, dating back hundreds of thousands of years, adapt or die. Now, sometimes it can seem that we modern Homo sapiens, the descendants of a long lineage of hominids who had adaptation bred into them biologically, take it for granted that we will, of course, be able to adapt to whatever it is that besets us. It's this confidence in our adaptive abilities that has helped us traverse radical shifts in societal norms brought on by massive, sudden technological advancements, philosophical shifts when it comes to structures of social inequality, or a good old-fashioned global pandemic. Whatever the modern calamity is, and no matter how seemingly insurmountable it appears to be, we feel confident that we will be able to collectively adapt to a new normal in order to deal with it. Even for seemingly apocalyptic issues like global climate change and the advent of nuclear weaponry, we humans soldier forth confident that we will adapt and find the road forward. But just because we're good at adaptation doesn't mean we necessarily enjoy it. In fact, we kind of collectively despise the process of adaptation, preferring to stay comfortable in our established state of day-to-day norms. A change in occupation, living situation, personal conviction, or even a death of a loved one, all of these are things we regularly have to adapt to and things we roundly dislike. And maybe that's okay. Maybe we don't need to embrace change with all the enthusiasm of a child on Christmas morning in order to be effective at it. Maybe it's enough that we just begrudgingly accept it as a necessary part of life and move on. Then again, maybe not. Today I'm going to be talking to Sammy Zahn. Sammy is a small business owner who is in the early stages of developing her bustling design and organization business, Simply Sam, when the global economy shut down due to COVID-19. What strikes me as particularly interesting about her is the way she approaches adaptation and change in her personal life and in her business. She doesn't do it slowly or begrudgingly. Instead, she seems to swing excitedly and confidently from one challenge to the next, knowing that there is no growth without discomfort and risk, and that the ability to adapt in a society full of people who were evolved to have that ability is not merely enough. In this world, you have to be able to adapt well, with a full commitment to the forward path and little, if any, clinging to the past. You have to outcompete by embracing adaptation entirely, not simply succumbing to it once it's clear that all attempts to resist are futile. I wonder if her story isn't a bigger lesson for us all. We know that change is inevitable and that adaptation is inescapable, so are we doing ourselves a disservice by begrudging these things? And could we be better served by learning to embrace our evolutionarily coded capacity to adapt? From a Blanket Fort recording studio in my one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to Sammy Zahn about adaptability.
A hard time because there's nothing, I don't know, when someone goes through like something traumatic, like whatever, like I think the time makes it eventually not go away, but you know, settle or whatever it is. But like with this, I think there's just such a sense of loss of control.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard to, because like we don't know when it'll be over. We don't know if it'll be bad again. And I feel like all of that is just, it affects us.
That's exactly what it is. It's the loss of control. And that's another reason why I thought adaptability would be a good topic, because that's a big thing that's just happening right now, is like everyone's in the process of figuring out how we're going to adapt and change to head into, you know, to use that buzz term, the new normal, what that looks like for businesses, what that looks like for individuals, what that looks like for entire industries. There's going to be a lot of adaptation that's going to have to take place. And right at the very precipice of that, right at the very beginning of that, I think there's a certain amount of understandable angst and anxiety and just feeling like I'm not in control of how this actually plays out. I'm not a big enough player on the world stage to really determine like what the new industry is going to look like. But like, I know I'm going to have to play ball. I'm going to have to, I'm going to have to make it work. I'm going to have to find a way to make it work for me and my situation.
Right. That we just don't, I mean, I don't know. It's just, we don't know what that's going to look like. But I think, so what's interesting is I really, I guess this adaptability, this sense of control, all of this is something that I think I've had to learn in recent years, both with like having my own business, but also just with certain things in my personal life. I think I always felt like there were things out of my control. So I did things to feel in control that like weren't smart.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think we all do that, but I think, you know, they can be really destructive. They can just be really destructive, and you have to be careful to not like do those things. But then also, I think in business, I just had to learn it really quickly, because you work with clients, you want the clients to be happy. You're not always going to agree with them, but like you also, when you're starting out, you don't want a bad review.
Right.
You don't want, and essentially, you know, they say the best way to grow a business is through word of mouth. Like mm-hmm. that is the number one form of marketing. And so you don't want someone to not refer you or pass your name along. And I feel like, so it's interesting because I am a professional organizer and designer, and both of those things really take, you know, kind of like a finite attention to detail. And a lot of people that work for me are very like type A, and very perfectionist minded. And I've really had to like, I guess, take a different approach, even though I have those abilities, but realize that we can't make everything perfect. We can't spend, you know, 10 hours on one thing to make it perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of have to let go of control and just sometimes think about like the big picture to get a project done.
Oh, totally. It's the process of collaboration that exists in so many industries. It's definitely something that I experience in theater and making music, where it's just like, you know, like there's a way that I might want it to be done, and there's a way that the person I'm working with might want it to be done. But at the end of the day, like getting the thing finished and making sure that like we have something that both of us can live with and both of us can be proud of, but that like that we actually like, yeah, there's a lot of relinquishing control and a lot of knowing when to fight for something and knowing when to let it go.
Yeah, totally.
Let's go back here.
Yeah.
We talked, so we're talking about the fact that you own a business and being adaptable with collaboration and stuff. But before all this begins, like, you're from Chicago, right?
Yeah.
You moved to, do you go to Utah for school?
Yeah. So I left Chicago at 18. I actually went to the University of Utah to be a modern dance major. My like overarching dream was to eventually be a dance movement therapist.
Okay.
So I started like my undergraduate degree, and it just like didn't really go as planned. I honestly, I grew up in a very chaotic home, and I don't know, some things were missed. I don't think I really knew how to take care of myself. And doing a full-time dance degree, like I probably wasn't eating right. I wasn't taking care of myself. I just feel like at 18, I didn't know how to take care of myself. And it was very like physically and emotionally demanding.
Right.
And so I kind of struggled my first few years of college. I was like, what the heck? I know I'm smart. I know I'm capable of this, but it wasn't translating. And eventually I changed majors to psychology, and and then that sent me on this path of being a therapist. But I always was thinking of ways to be, I guess, adaptable to my dreams and like somehow find a way to put creativity in that. I love psychology and I love people, but I also am a creative by nature. And I knew by just being a therapist, I was going to lack that. So I was like, maybe I'll do yoga therapy. And then money comes into play, because dance therapists make like an average of like 40 grand a year, even like 5 years into it, you know, like.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you can even make that much. Like I don't think I've ever heard of dance therapy. It sounds awesome. Like, it sounds like something that I would actually like to try. But I think that's really interesting because those things seem so different to start out undergrad, modern dance, switch did you switch to psychology for grad school?
So I switched to psychology for my undergrad. My undergraduate degrees that I ended up graduating in are a Bachelor of Science in Psychology and a Bachelor of Science in Human Development and Family Studies.
Okay.
So I have both degrees. It took me 7 years to finish my undergrad.
Yeah.
It was rough. I had semesters where I didn't go to school. I had a lot of ups and downs, and it was really hard. It was really, really hard for me. What is funny is the reason I found out at like 23. So that's like what, a year after you're supposed to even graduate from college. I think if you go at 18, I found out at 23, that I PTSD. So I went like undiagnosed with PTSD for like 10 years. And then after that, and when I was like being treated, I then actually was able to like finish college, but I like had to get all these accommodations and things. And that was even hard. Like, I had to be adaptable in that situation because I know that I'm like a smart person. Like, growing up, I like tested high, like I had high test scores and, you know, all those things. So I just was like not understanding why I couldn't do well in college, but I had untreated PTSD, and which made it just, the college learning setting didn't quite work for the way my brain connected information.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was like a long explanation, but I graduated college and started grad school for marriage and family therapy. So it was like finally on this like normal path, like, you know, just going to go to grad school. Grad school was actually fine, but I got like laid off of a job that was like pretty just like stable, didn't really care about during grad school. And my fiance, now husband, he was in school full time, and he was an economics major, and like he wasn't working because his degree was so demanding. Like, he'd have to spend like 8 hours a day doing math. Mm-hmm. And so I was providing for us, and so I needed to find something to do for money.
What's his degree in that he's doing that he's doing 8 hours a day of math?
Economics.
Oh, economics. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think you said that, and it went over my head. My girlfriend was a math major. So I was wondering if they had the same major, but no, economics. That's good. That's good for starting a business. But okay. So yeah, you need to figure out how you're going to fund all of this schooling.
Yeah. And like, okay, I guess I'm just gonna go into like deep debt during grad school. But like, I didn't want to take out loans to live, right? And my graduate degree was actually like all online. Like, it wasn't even like a full-time degree. It was like a 3-4 year program. So I like knew I needed to work during it. And so I was like, I think I'm going to just like try organizing for people, like organizing their pantries, organizing this. And my husband and family were like, okay, I guess. And
so how do you,
I like started.
How do you get that idea? I mean, like, is design and organization something that you'd always been interested in? Or was it just something you noticed, like, man, a lot of my friends struggle with this, and it's something that kind of comes easy for me? Or, like, how does that idea get born?
So I think both, actually. So I've always, like, loved design. I've loved decor. Like, I always thought it'd be fun to, like, work in a furniture store or, like, design people's houses. Like, I've always, like, looked at real estate for fun. Like, I always have had, like, that inkling. My mom is very design-oriented. I grew up in a home that was, like, perfectly styled, like very beautiful, like in magazines, whatever. My mom's actually a jewelry designer, so kind of grew up with that. And then also growing up, I would organize my friends' closets for fun. And then, like, through my mental health, I guess, growth, I learned that the less clutter I had in my life, the more organized I was, the better I felt. Okay. So there was, like, this psychology part of it that I had this, like, dream, like, oh, I'm going to change people's lives. Like, I was like, ooh, maybe I'll, like, be like an organizing design therapist and, you know, like do therapy with people in their homes and help them make it a better environment. Which isn't quite what I do now. I definitely think about it with every client, but,
I like that it's always rooted back to, like, when it was going to be dance, it was going to be dance therapy and, like, helping people through dance. And then it was like, well, maybe I'll just be, like, a psychologist or a therapist and, like, just help, like a family therapist or, like, you know. And then it's like, okay, well, I'll do this design thing to help pay for school. But it's like, ooh, I can actually help people, you know, sort of do therapy through decluttering, like be a Marie Kondo for Salt Lake City. And I think that's interesting that you're always able to, in this process of adapting and adapting and adapting the plan, always able to root it back to kind of the same root goal of helping people, which is really nice.
Yeah. So you're totally right. Like, if people that just, like, hear the story or hear parts of the story, they're like, what? You were, like, a dancer? And I'm like, I've always wanted to help people. I think one quality I really have is being able to see something from all sides. And then I also, there's this weird culture within women of when someone's, like, talking about their boyfriend and something he did, I feel like women are very quick to be like, he sucks. like
he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit. That's problematic because women also tell their significant others everything. So I'm gonna tell my friend your boyfriend's a piece of shit, and then she's gonna go tell her boyfriend that I said that, and then that's gonna create more problems. And I just see it. I see it happening all the freaking time. So I really tried to not be that person and give my friends advice. This neutral perspective of, like, well, what if he's seen it like this? And I think when I first started doing that with some of my friends, they were like, what the fuck? Like, why are you on his side? I'm like, I'm not on his side. I still think what he did is messed up. But I also know you're in a relationship with him and you're not ending it. Like,
right.
Like, what if we just, like, make this, like, relationship better?
Right. If he's really like terrible and toxic, then we need to talk about, like, like, exit strategies. But, like, if it's just like, he hurt my feelings today. And which, you know, there's the I think it's an old, like, generality and stereotype that, like, and I hear this as a man all the time from other male friends who are like, well, women don't want to hear from you how to fix the problem. They just want to hear sympathy. They just want you to just sympathize and empathize and, like, and just tell them and validation and just tell them, oh my gosh, you're so right. And I'm like, yeah, there's good stuff to be had there where it's like, not coming at a person's problems always from a analytical standpoint, but sometimes just coming from a more emotional and empathetic stance, where in that moment, what is needed is just a little bit of encouragement and validation and sympathy or empathy. And but I think that's just kind of what I have to do as a man, because
like, no, I have to be careful with that as well.
Right.
I do. Sometimes my friends are like, I don't want advice, but there is a difference between like empathy and sympathy versus like just agreeing with their feeling.
Uh-huh.
Like you can say, I understand that. I'm really sorry you're having a rough day. But there's a difference between that and like, that's messed up. Like, he sucks. You should, I don't know, whatever, do this vengeful thing. Like, I don't know. There's just this also this culture of being almost too sympathetic.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So,
and then you're in danger of becoming an enabler at that point, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I grew up in a home where, my mom was an alcoholic, my dad, I don't really know what he is, but has his own issues. My parents definitely enabled each other's problems. And so I grew up in that environment. So I think just like growing up, I don't want to enable anyone. I don't want to enable anyone's unhealthy relationships. And then I think all of that translates into what I do now, even though what I do now is like slightly more superficial.
Well, but I think it probably certainly does, because I imagine that people are inviting you into their space, into their home, with the intent of having you help them declutter, organize, and maybe even kind of design a more welcoming and like more productive space. But at the same time, you probably run into issues where people have a hard time letting go of certain ways of doing things. They're inviting you in saying, help me, but at the same time going, I actually like that the way it is. And it's like, well, you can't have it both ways. And that's, I think therapists run into that issue all the time, where someone comes into their office and goes, help me. And they go, okay, do this. And they go, oh, but I don't want to do that. Don't help me like that.
Yes. And so it's actually kind of funny, because I feel like as a therapist, you're almost limited in what you can do and say, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's way more liability, but I can literally tell someone, no, I hate that.
Yeah, that's right? Terrible.
Like, I can say that's terrible and I can tell them why, versus as a therapist, you're more like a guide. And like, I love therapy, and who knows? People ask me sometimes, like, oh, are you going to be a therapist one day? Like, yeah, maybe I will. Maybe I'll go to grad school when I'm older and be a therapist. And
well, it sounds...
be on my feet all day. But
it sounds like you were on that path. It sounds like you were on your way to becoming a therapist. What exactly happens that makes this become the new thing, the new move for you and your now husband?
So, and that is, you know what? I probably can attribute some of it to Marie Kondo's Netflix show.
Wow.
Because I started my business in like October of 2018. Marie Kondo's Netflix show came out that January. Mm-hmm. And so one, decluttering and organizing, the industry went from like, well, first of all, I don't think people realize that it is like a $7 billion industry. But in 2019, it was a $10 billion industry. So it's like growing exponentially, and it's because of Marie Kondo. There's also these organizers that are less Marie Kondo-y, like more like design-oriented kind. Well, I'm maybe more like them. They actually are about to, their Netflix show comes out this year. and they're called the Home Edit. And so I had been following them. I had been following, like, I just started following lots of organizers and designers. And so basically my business just to make cash. And I'll also say that I was, so the business started October 2018. March 2019 was when I was getting married. And so we also had this, like, not problem, but this issue of I need to have money for my wedding because I'm a crazy person and wanted an insane wedding. But, like, from a design perspective, I just wanted everything, like, perfectly decorated. I got married in, like, a barn in the middle of nowhere.
Where did you get married? Did you get married in Utah or?
Yeah. So we got married on a ranch, entrance of Zion, in a town called Orderville.
Oh, my God. Beautiful.
It was really beautiful. But anyway, I just, like, had this dream, and I wanted this, like, weekend wedding, and we called it, like, Camp Blind, and, like, everyone, and, like, stayed for the whole weekend. So everyone came Friday night, left Sunday morning, and, like, we had, like, so every, I don't know, we had all the meals and, like, activities. It was really crazy. But I had already planned my wedding, and then, like, this is, like, probably TMI, but basically, like, in the midst of me planning my wedding, my parents started a legal battle. My mom kind of went after my dad for back pay and child support, and so a lot of financial stuff was going on with my parents, and my parents still, like, helped with the wedding, but, like, a lot of the burden ended up being on my husband and I.
Wow.
And I will tell you, in this situation, I was straight up just not adaptable.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, no, I am having the wedding I want, when I want it, where I want it, and I am not changing it. So,
In some ways, that almost sounds like you could argue that that is being adaptable, though, that it's like, oh, cool. So, like, the way that it's supposed to go, where, like, my parents are supposed to be a big part of helping with this, that's not going to happen. Yeah. Well, I'm going to make it work on my own then. Like, I'm going to figure out a new way to make it work, you know?
Yeah. And I will say, okay, because my mom's probably going to listen to this. My mom actually fully came through and fully helped us. And she's amazing.
Yeah.
You're completely right. I did have to be adaptable. And, like, literally, it was just one of those situations where, like, I was like, I need to make money, so I'm going to figure out how to make money. And I had everything to lose, but I almost, in a way, had nothing to lose. Because it was either going to work or not. So I full force. And so I think it was at that point, kind of like that December, January, where I was like, I think I'm going to try implementing design, because organizing, like, I love organizing. We still do it for all, like, almost all of our clients. But I have clients that are just like, we organize the pantry or whatever, but, you know, real money is interior design. There's a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
Because furniture is very expensive. And I mean, people just pay a lot of money to have someone design their home. So I'm going to try and be an interior designer and kind of, you know, help people with functional design. That's, like, what I thought of. I was like, you know, people have, like, all these things and then it doesn't, like, fit all their stuff. They, like, buy a dresser and they can't, like, put their stuff away.
Right.
So, and I was seeing that in my organizing clients. I was like, this furniture is not functional for these people. And I knew I could make it pretty and functional.
Uh-huh.
And so, December, we were in North Dakota with my husband's family. And I had Paul, a potential client. At the time, I did not know that this would be the client that would, like, literally, I guess, excel my career. She I don't know, she was like telling me what she wanted, and I knew I could do it. And few photos that I had posted of like some rooms I had like helped people with, or like some rooms in my house she like liked. And I remember like walking upstairs and sitting at the table with my husband's family and being like, I think I'm going to design this person's house. And my husband's grandma goes, you're not a designer. And I was like, yes, I am.
I am now.
I was like, I can be whatever I want to be.
Yeah.
And so that client that I talked to that day, her name is Kira, and she actually, like, she reached out to me, but she has 1.5 million YouTube subscribers.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, just fully helped us launch our career. She filmed the entire process of her designing our home. We designed their whole home from top to bottom. I mean, she's a good friend now, but, like, I was in all their videos. I got like probably like 6,000 plus followers just from her. And so it really excelled things. And it's hard because I have had to be, again, adaptable, because when I had that influx of people, I'm sure there were people that reached out to me that I totally lost the ball on because I just didn't have the processes in place. I really didn't know what I was doing. I was just faking it till I made it.
Yeah, things are kind of accelerating faster than you maybe anticipated. And it's just like, well, I gotta produce something.
Yeah. And so I'd like talk to people or like, you know, forget to email someone back. And I'm like, still planning my wedding, like designing this girl's house, getting other clients. And it was just it was really crazy time. And there was also a ton of stuff going on with my family. And I was just like, what is going on? Why did I start a business right before my wedding?
I think that that's a big fear that a lot of people have when it comes to the idea of like succeeding or of like pushing hard for something that they want is it's like, well, what happens if I get it and I'm not ready? Like, or like if it starts happening and I'm like not in a place where I, you know, it's like there's so many fears. There's fears of just failure, just putting all my money into something that doesn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also that fear of like, what happens if it starts happening and I'm like not able to produce? Like, what happens if I get like, land some big clients, some big jobs, some big opportunities. And I'm, and like, so yeah, you gotta just be ready to like jump in and like, and like, I think you said on the phone the other day, not be afraid of failure, you know, not be afraid of, of disappointing people
Well, I'll tell you what, you're going to disappoint everyone. There's going to be a point in, I mean, especially in this job where you have long-term clients, I don't think there's ever been a point where, like, I think every client ever gets frustrated. It's a long process. Something always goes wrong. It's not even always my fault. Like, you order something and it takes, like, even right now, we're dealing with something where we had a lead time on some custom cabinetry that was 4 to 6 weeks. By the time we get them, it's going to be 14. And there's just nothing, there's literally 0% I can do.
Yeah.
And you just have to keep people in good spirits, do stuff for them. And then you also want to like give them something, but not lose money. And so there's all these things that go into it, but it really does all come back to being able to adapt, because literally I would do something wrong and I would write it down and then I would just like change it.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, need to put that in contract. Oh, need to explain that better. Like, oh, need to get this process in place. And it doesn't always just happen right away, but know, then it needs to happen. You can also explain things differently to clients. And I also think that some people get really hung up. Like, you're not going to get every client that you talk to.
Right.
And every client's not right for you. Right. I think there have probably been clients that didn't pan out, that it didn't pan out for a reason. And I do think that, like, as your business grows, as your life changes, you're able to let more in. So, like, you know, when I started the business, I was driving like a Subaru Forester and doing everything out of this little car. My husband didn't even have a car. I randomly hired an employee who had a third car. So sometimes she would drive like their truck and help us out. And I would just like pay her extra. So like finally I got a truck, and then we bought my husband a second car so that we could, you know, do that. We moved into a bigger house with a huge garage so we could work out of our garage because we were living in an apartment. And as we did those things, we like almost allowed ourselves to grow more and were able to take on more. And then like we got more clients because we were able to handle more.
Yeah. And that's a process of exactly like investing and building and recognizing just that it is a process of trial and error. I think that a lot of people don't realize that too, that it's okay early on when you're building a business to make mistakes and to realize, oh, yeah, you know what, I need to up my inventory and my equipment in this area, and I need to, yeah, like you said, include this in the contract next time, and I need to make sure that I'm covering my own ass on this next time because I didn't foresee that problem. But it's like these are things that a lot of times you can't know until they happen. And then you know, I've heard from a lot of people who start independent businesses that like for the first little while, everything they make just goes right back into the business. Everything like monetarily, where it's like, I need to make sure that I'm continually fueling this machine not just expecting it to be self-supporting and self-sufficient right off the bat. And I really like hearing
that.
I was just going to say, I really like hearing that bit that you said about that you're going to disappoint everyone, because that's another big thing I think that can deter people, is the experience of being like, wow, I really feel like I'm trying my hardest here, and I really feel like I'm proud of the work that I'm doing. And like, if you're, whether you're graphic design or you know, you're editing video footage for someone, you know, like, and they come back and they always have notes for you, or they always have like, or they have an issue. And it's like, that's just part of, again, like we said at the beginning, the collaborative process, and also just the process of like you trying to be a facilitator of what's in someone else's head while also bringing to the table what is special about your brand. And it's just a process that like you're almost never going to just nail it and they're going to go, wow, that's perfect. That's 10 times better than anything I could have ever imagined. It's like, that's just not a realistic expectation. And and you need to be willing to be adaptable there too and roll with those punches.
Totally. And, you know, I think that in the end, most of our clients like love what we did.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just like the middle part where it feels like things are unfinished and, you know, things aren't coming together. But you just need, I mean, you have to almost baby your clients and be like, you know, it is going to look the way that we discussed, you know,
right.
And they just have to trust you.
Right.
And it's hard because especially in my business, I mean, they probably get, I mean, in most cases with like a long-term project, I mean, like minimum 10 grand, you know,
right.
For the most part, maybe a little bit less, but that's like a lot of money.
Yeah.
People are like, if this doesn't work out, like, what am I going to do? But thus far, like, I don't think we've really had anything that has completely not panned out. I think there's definitely been things that we could have done better, or we lost money on because we messed something up and didn't do it right. But honestly, like, it's all worth it making the client happy in the end. And then also, sometimes you got to just finish something for the freaking photo, because yes, that's the whole point. You know, sometimes I inquiries from clients or potential clients, and they're like, can you just help me pick art for my house? And their budget's not a lot, you know, and I'm not even going to be able to take a picture because the rest of their house maybe doesn't look great. Or they just want help with, like, sometimes I think I think part of it is also learn when to not be adaptable,
yeah,
and have boundaries and say no to money. Because I think it's really easy to say yes to everything, but especially if something's like budget, you're not going to be able to take a picture, you're not going to really get anything out of it. It's probably not worth it, and that's okay. I think when you're able to say no to things, the yeses will come. Like there will be more work. And something I've had to learn is, like, there are weeks where I'm like, oh no, the calendar's really empty for next month. Like, what am I going to do? And I kind of have a mini freak out and I'm like, what the heck? Like, how are we going to pay our bills? And then for some reason, like, all of a sudden the next week, like, I have like 10 inquiries and like 5 consultations. And, like, you know, I think sometimes that's just having your own business. There's a lot of patience involved, and there's a lot of trusting yourself involved. And it's, you just have to, like, I mean, you really just have to trust in yourself and know that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. What are some of the, what are, like, how long have you been doing the business now at this point, by the way?
So, okay. So what did I say? October 2018. So October, March, April, May. So we just passed a year and a half.
Wow. I mean, that's a lot of growth for the first year and a half. That's a really good start to a business.
Yeah. So, and I'm definitely lucky. Like, I think, you know, there's luck involved, but I also, you know, we talked a lot about my background with schooling, but mm-hmm. we didn't really touch on, I, during college, had some of the craziest jobs.
Yeah.
Like, I worked for, like, millionaires and billionaires and managed their homes and took care of their kids, but also managed their homes, organized for them. You know, I had one job where I managed a 30,000 square foot estate by myself. And my boss would be like, hey, this room needs new furniture. Like, go figure it out. So there were things that I was doing before, and I was working with high level people. So there were skills that I had that, like, I'm not just like this amazing person that can, like, just make something out of nothing. Like, I did a lot of things that helped me, like, that I'm using today. And that's one thing that I, you know, really try to tell people is, like, your job doesn't always need to be what your career is. Like, you are gonna learn from every job, and right. you should challenge yourself. You shouldn't just, like, be a waitress because you're also trying to be an actor. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do something that brings you joy, even if it's not your, like, long-term joy, if that makes sense. Or just something that's really going to challenge you and be fulfilling, even if it's only for a year.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, a mindset of a millennial that's, I think, positive. Like, some people are telling us, like, no, like, you guys jump from thing to thing too quickly. Like, almost like people think we're, like, to go with the flow. But I honestly, without some of those weird random jobs, wouldn't be where I am today.
Right.
Like, at all.
Right.
So.
Absolutely. And that Sarah and I, who set me up with you, you know, we talked about that on her episode that she did on the day jobs episode, just about how any place you're working is a great opportunity to learn about yourself, to learn new skill sets, to learn how to interface with customers and whatever it is. And it will all inform what you do down the road for sure. I it's that old saying, my high school theater teacher used to say this, and I agree with it. It's the way you do anything is the way you'll do everything. So just kind of the way you approach any task, if it's, you know, if it's like, oh, I don't really care about, you know, painting the set. It's like, well, the way that you approach that is the way you're going to approach everything in life. And I like that. It's a nice little idiom. What in the year and a half you've been doing this, what's like, what are some of the big risks you've taken, or is there like a singular, like, big risk that you were really scared about that paid off, or maybe didn't? I don't know.
I think, okay, so number one was when my husband graduated college. So he actually has a degree in psychology and economics, so mm-hmm. both. And my husband's an interesting guy. He like loves math, but would never work in an office,
mm-hmm.
but also kind of grew up like thinking he'd just like get married, have a job, provide for his family, and kind of hate his life. I think hopefully brought to my marriage is I think I've like helped my husband learn how to have a dream.
Yeah.
I don't think he like quite has like, you know, full ambitious dreams yet, but he definitely has like learned how to like have a dream. Actually, the other day he did tell me, he's like, we should get a lake house one day. And I was like, yes, that's what I want to hear.
Love it. Love it.
But so he kind of grew up with this, like, I don't know, just like kind of like work hard, American dream. Like, I guess it pays off when you retire. I'm not really sure what he had in mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, so he also never pictured himself working with his wife, especially me. So he had been helping me his last semester of school. Like, I'd be like, oh, can you come be like a handyman, you know? And he was like, sure. Because I was just like, you know, it's his last semester of school. And at that point, I mean, we were like, he got married right in the middle of the semester. So I guess we got married, but still we like hadn't really combined our money. So I was like, oh, you know, you can make $200. Like, he was like, sure. And then graduated, I was like, I think you should try and work for me full time. Because at that point, like, I was doing the math, and even if he, like, worked, like, 3 days a week or something, he was still making, like, bringing in, like, about, like, $50,000 to the business.
Yeah.
And I think, like, a job out of college, I don't know, maybe he would have made that. But then, like, it was, like, this weird thing where, like, the business couldn't grow as much without him or someone like him.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, just try it for 3 months. And then if it doesn't work out, like, we'll figure something else out. Like, and so that was like I think a big risk, because it was a risk on our newlywed marriage.
Right.
It was a risk on, he just had gone into like, what, like $30,000 in debt for his undergraduate degrees.
Jeez.
Should we really do this? And so I think that was a huge risk, but it's definitely excelled our growth.
Good.
I think a lot of what designers, organizers, like that realm of people lack is at the time he was just a handyman, like, you know, a full-time handyman to hang stuff. Usually people have to hire that stuff out, and then that's like a whole other thing to deal with. But actually, my husband now has a general contractor's license, which he got at the end of last year. So he was able to get that based off of his he like built houses growing up, and like, so he had this experience.
Yeah.
He just wasn't sure it was what he wanted to do. And then I think like another huge risk for us was we were living in like a $900 a month like apartment when we started everything. You know, low costs, and we decided to move into a house where our rent was going to be like $2,400 a month in rent, which if you're talking to someone in LA, it doesn't sound like a lot, but like I know my brother.
I mean, that sounds, that's expensive more to me. $2,400 is, yeah. I mean, I'm like, we have a great deal on the place that we live in.
And yeah, no, I mean, there are great deals, but yeah. it is expensive for like my brother's rent in LA is more than ours. He just splits it between roommates, you know,
right,
what I
right,
mean?
Right.
But we're not roommates. We're a married couple. So right. Stuff like that. But yeah, no, it was a lot. So like that was a huge risk, but this place that we live in, we still live in it. We paid our rent on time. Had a car garage with like, I don't know the exact dimensions, but like 10, 12 foot ceilings, mm-hmm. and like a shop built into it.
Yeah.
So the day I saw that, I was like, this is it. Because I was looking at some other stuff because we knew we needed space. So like I was looking at some other stuff, even stuff that was like $2,000 that didn't, you know, that didn't have that. And without that, we would have undoubtedly had to get an office space or something in like the last year. But we'll be able to really like grow in our current home. So yeah, basically doing this, I mean, more than doubling our rent was a huge risk.
Yeah.
But like I said before, it paid off because it allowed us to have bigger and better clients.
Yep.
And so we've made more because we like, but you have to take that risk first.
Right, right, right.
And that's the hard part.
You've got to kind of put that faith out there into the universe, and you've got to kind of like, uh-huh. It's the field of dreams thing. If you build it, they will come. You got to kind of, it's like, you can't be like, well, I'm going to get enough clients to the point where I can afford a really great office space for my thing. It's like, you got to uh-huh. sometimes just go put the cart before the horse and go,
yeah.
We got to sort of trust that a horse is going to come along and pull this cart.
I'm sure there are people that do that. I'm sure there are people that like are very low risk, grow their business slowly, and it works out for them.
Definitely.
I think part of it does have to do with the socioeconomic level I was raised in. I grew up in a small town in Illinois, right outside Chicago, that 80% of my high school was Jewish. I think the average like household income is like over 100,000, but you know, most people are like $1 million homes. So I think that there's like a certain lifestyle that maybe I'm accustomed to that I just like is normal to me. So I like made decisions in line with that. And it, I don't know if that makes any sense. Like, I think my risk, I have less risk associated with certain things because of the way I was raised, which I want to make it very clear that my parents did like not invest in this business. I like fully had no money. And like, I was like, I have this $500 credit card like it literally was a $500 limit credit card that wow. I just had no balance on. And I was like, I'm going to use this to start my business. So, but maybe like the way I was raised, like I think has attributed to some of my decision making.
Yeah.
Whether it was good or bad.
Yeah. contributed to some level of risk aversion that you have that allows you to sort of throw caution to the wind maybe a little bit more than other small business owners. The last thing that yes. I wanted to talk to you about is I wanted to know, I'm wondering if this current place that we're in with the quarantine and with the pandemic
yeah.
has taken a toll on your business. And if so, What are, like, how have you been adapting to that? And what do you think kind of the future looks like going forward? Or has it taken a toll? Or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we were really lucky that we had just started a project when the pandemic hit. And it was a basement remodel. And so my husband has been able to work on that this entire time. And we've been able to work and get paid. And our clients have, the husband has a pretty good job and that's not going anywhere. He's in tech. So, you know, a lot of those jobs have been more secure, I guess. So that was not affected. Like, we weren't like, oh, how are we going to pay our rent? But I think what I'm seeing now is clients reaching out with maybe a little less money. Like, they want to do something for 10 instead of 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Which what's hard is things that haven't changed in cost. So, like, my overhead's still the same. My material cost is still the same. It'll be interesting to see what happens in that regard. Like, I still have work and still busy, but it'll be interesting to see kind of how that pans out.
Yeah, as people are maybe a little bit less reticent to let go of their money, or they want, like, they still want to do something, but maybe for what's a better deal that we can get on this? And that doesn't really change your expenses, you know? But so.
No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So I think there are going to be some smaller projects that we do. However, I live in Utah. Utah was already growing exponentially. And a lot of our clients in the past year and a half were people that came from California, Seattle, Texas. I don't know why Texas, but I've had 10 clients that moved here from Texas. So apparently people moved to Utah from Texas.
Wow.
But kind of, I think, bigger, more expensive cities and came to Utah because, like, I know, for example, one of our clients in LA had $1 million house that they sold. Like, they sold their $1 million house. They had a lot of equity in it. They came here, bought a house, like, bigger, better, way more luxurious for $600,000 or something. And then they had cash to play with. And so I think that's still going to be happening. Like, maybe on the front end, people are going to sell their houses for a little bit more. But one thing about this crisis, and this has to do with economics, but is it's not like the last time the market crashed and the economy was down, in the sense that, like, when that happened in 2008, people didn't have equity in their homes. People were very, cash poor and house poor. And now people might be a little bit cash poor, but, like, they might have 200 grand in equity in their home.
Mm.
And so, like, especially, like, that's just, like, an economic thing. So, like, I'm still getting clients that are like, oh, we'll take out a home equity line of credit. And they still have equity in their home and they're still putting money into it. So there's kind of some weird things that are actually positive for the construction design industry. We'll see where we're at in 6 months, but I guess I'm not worried, but I also think there's still going to be like some adapting and some kind of just, you know, different things that we're going to have to just figure out.
It almost seems like it's almost too early to call where it's actually going to land and where it's actually going to go. Yeah. But just the one thing we do know for sure is that we most likely will have to do some adapting.
100%. Like, we've already had to adapt some. Like I said before, there have been extra long lead times, like stuff like that. that you just have to account for, because you want to be able to get in, get out, and finish. You don't want to have to be on it for months on end. So I think just things like that, so that, you know, you can save money where you can, and then also, you know, still make a profit, even if something changes and it's like a little bit less, like you mark something up less or whatever. I just think, overall, you know, I think the pandemic has forced us to adapt, but I think it's something that's just necessary in life to be successful.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. So Simply Sam is the name of the business?
Oh, yeah. So Simply Sam Organization and Design. Mm-hmm. And on Instagram, I'm Simply Sam Organized.
Okay.
And yeah. So.
And is there a website?
Yeah. Simply Sam Organized.
SimplySamOrganized.com. Simply Sam Organized on Instagram. I think if people just type in Simply Sam, they'll probably find it.
Yes, and my logo's pink, so I'm hard to miss.
Yep, pink logo.
Everyone's logo's black and white.
Cool. Well, I'm so glad that you wanted to talk to me, or that you were willing to talk to me, I should say, and that you were willing to take some time. Yeah, to do this. And that you're willing to even reschedule to do it too. So thank you.
Of course. Yeah, no, any time. And I think it's always good to just talk to people, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it's always good to hear from people who are doing something scary or hard and who are out there kind of blazing their own path. It's really cool to hear how people come by doing something that they maybe didn't expect to do, and how they roll and adapt with the way that life unfolds around them.
Yeah, and still have joy. Like, I think, I don't know.
Absolutely.
I try to live with no regrets, mm-hmm. honestly. Too many people have regrets.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely. Well, cool. Thank you, Sam. Sam?
No, Sam, sorry.
Either one?
Yeah, either one, seriously.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, cool. It was good talking with you. Okay, so there it is. That's my conversation with Sammy Zahn. You can look up Simply Sam on Instagram. It's a little pink logo that says Simply Sam. She's still doing projects for people. So if you need some organization, some design in your life, some clarity, need to declutter, you need to Marie Kondo the shit out of your apartment, your house, your garage, whatever it is, hit her up, you know? And I want to hear from you on what you think about the thoughts shared about the ability to adapt in your personal lives and for us as a society right now. Obviously, I'm trying to kind of shoehorn this into social issues as well. I want to hear from you on what you think of the last few minisodes and this episode, kind of where you're sitting, what your take is on this stuff. Let's chat. Hit me up on the People Pleaser DMs. I still am locked out of my main Instagram profile. Don't know if I'll ever get back into that. So I just have the Me and Me Comedy and the People Pleaser Instagram. So if you're not following People Pleaser, go follow that account. Hit me up. Let me know what your thoughts are. You can still go to Apple Podcasts and rate this podcast 5 stars and leave a review, and I'll read your review on the show and review you back. That's something you can do. That's always fun. But yeah, that's it. Hope you're all staying safe out there and, you know, having a good time and watching, you know, fun shows and reading. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. The show is mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn at Marmalade Music. Marmalade Music is an audio engineering company that is ready to take your audio project, be it your podcast, your single, your EP, your album, to the next level, okay? Chris is the best in the biz, and he's out there slaying it. And you can hit him up at marmalademusicslc.com, and you tell him that you listen to this show, he's going to give you 20% off your first project, okay? marmalademusicslc.com. Tell him that you listen to People Pleaser. You'll get 20% off. How's that? Huh? That nice? Marmalade Music produces all of my stuff. I've got singles out right now for my upcoming album that are available if you search Austin Archer on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you listen to your music. And all those singles were mixed and mastered by Chrissy Bear over at Marmalade Music. So go check those out. And you can just see more of my material at austin-archer.com. That's my website, austin-archer.com. And we'll see you next week. Love you very much, and take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye.